Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, May 17th, 2018. With me today, Dave Hamilton. And Dave, I have to say, you sound wonderful.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I agree.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah. Kelly Dumont, I'm glad you're here, and you sound fantastic, too.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you on the show today, and we might as well just jump right in, and let's start with beta. And by beta, I mean, what do you want to do to make sure that you don't just have your entire life fall apart because you're so excited and want to try the latest and greatest pre-release operating system from Apple? And what's making me want to talk about this today is that on the 14th, I believe, we got iOS Developer Beta 5. And here we are on the 17th, and we got iOS 11.4 Developer Beta 6. And what that tells me is that we are so close to the official public release of iOS 11.4, and we're also getting really close to Worldwide Developer Conference, which means that we're probably going to get to see the first versions of the next generation of iOS and macOS. And of course, everyone is going to want to check these out in one way or another. So for everyone that's totally cool rushing in where angels fear to tread and trying out early beta software, we should get everyone ready for that.
So, absolutely.
Hit me with tips on what people can do to make sure they don't get burned by these early betas.
Well, my favorite tip is have a spare device that you use to test. Now, I say that's my favorite tip. That's one of those do as I say, not as I do kind of things. you know, because here's how it works for me with, well, I know you're talking about iOS betas, but I'm going to kind of take the elevator up a few floors here and just look a little more broadly at WWDC, right? Because that's coming up too. They always release the first beta of both macOS and iOS, right? Mm-hmm. And so I do bring a spare iPhone with me when I travel anyway, just because I have a spare iPhone that I keep, because we don't keep insurance on our phone, so I keep a spare iPhone. It might as well be with me when I travel, which is when it would be sort of the most critical to have a device that's working. Right. So I use that as the opportunity to put iOS on that device. However, my MacBook Air, my trusty 2011 MacBook Air, has traveled with me to every WWDC since I got it. And at least up through last year, it would also run the very latest builds of macOS. And it does. It currently runs High Sierra. Whether that will continue or not, I can't imagine. But
we'll know in June.
In a few weeks. And so I wait until I am finished with whatever podcasts I need to record that week. And I'm talking record, not necessarily guest on, because I can always sort of cobble together some way to get my audio to someone else. But if I have to record them and manage the show, I do that with a known stable system. And then I install whatever the very first developer preview release. I don't even think they call it like beta one, although that's what it usually becomes in retrospect. But it's like developer preview one or whatever. But I do bring an external hard drive with me that I clone my system to first. So I can boot from that if I totally FUBAR everything.
That's
so there's
clever.
A lot of advice baked into a narrative for you.
Sure.
That was excellent advice and a wonderful narrative. Dave, what I do is, for WWDC with those early releases, I don't install the macOS version until I get back from WWDC. And that's because I want to travel with just one laptop, and I don't want to have to think about resetting and reformatting anything. Although I always have my iPad mini with me. And so that first iOS release that comes out, that goes right on the iPad mini. That's my sacrificial device. And if it runs great, awesome. And if it doesn't, then it's time for me to roll back to a backup and keep going. So I do the multi-device thing as well. And that has worked out pretty well for me so far.
Yeah.
I do multi-device. So my daily driver, if it gets a beta, regardless of whether it's my laptop or my phone or my iPad, if I do have spare iOS devices, a spare laptop at my house is a little harder to come by. So usually what I end up doing is the opposite of Dave. I will install the beta on an external drive and boot from that. And then I can try it. But if I need to go somewhere, do something because my daily driver is a laptop, then I don't have to take anything extra with me to make sure that I can do everything I need to do. The tip that I would give people, or the thing, I guess, to do during beta season is have some awareness. So if you're a person who's going to go install the initial developer preview the day it comes out, and you've had it for an hour and you discover that some app that you use all the time is broken in the first beta. First of all, if it's the developer beta, the developers got it the same day you did. So don't expect it to be
surprised.
Fixed.
Yeah,
right.
Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if it's broken, first of all. And second of all, if it is broken, writing to developers and asking them for a fix isn't going to get you anywhere. All you can do is tell them what happened. I have this computer and I installed developer zero on it. And every time I try to open your app, it crashes with error 27. Okay.
And be nice about that. Not, right. This is not a complaint. You are now being helpful.
Right.
Right.
And yes, that's important.
You know, just Joe Friday that, but like, don't be mad it isn't fixed, because especially when it's a developer beta, it's for developers. And so all of the people who are capable of fixing that, first of all, if you're doing the developer preview during WWDC, a lot of those people are in San Jose right now trying to learn a bunch of stuff that will help them make their apps better. Yeah. So they are there trying to learn everything that they can find out, everything that they can do so that they can make these apps better for you and make everything great and have it happen on a reasonable time frame. And sometimes it's hard to do that when you're not home. Not all developers live in San Jose. So a lot of people are there staying in a hotel or doing a bunch of in-person people stuff, which not a lot of people do the rest of the year sometimes. So you have to kind of be aware that this is what's happening. So if you're going to install the developer beta and make sure that your apps, you know, and you want to make sure all the apps that you normally use work, just send that information in. Don't demand a fix. Don't be angry about it. Just let people know, this is the error I get. This is the thing that's happening. Everything on the screen turns blue, whatever it is, because they want to fix it just as much as you want it fixed. But also remember that Apple generally doesn't approve an update to something for an App Store app that only fixes stuff that's in a beta.
That's been a thing
that people run into every year is we have a fix, but we can't deploy it until something in released needs fixed as well, because Apple won't approve it till that happens. So if there's something that you absolutely need that comes both inside and outside the App Store, you may want to look at outside if you're regularly going to be on betas.
Yeah, you need to be ready for apps not to work. And it's very specifically, it's email plugins. My life is much better because of email plugins like MailActon and SigPro from the folks at SmallCubed and things like that. And those will not work. Like, it's a guarantee that they won't work with the new beta until, at the very least, the developer pushes some sort of update that says, yes, allow this to work with Mail version X. But chances are it will require an entire rewrite. And so it's not going to happen that week or even the week after, or perhaps even the month after. Right. And I've been at cocktail parties like the night after, you know, Monday night of WWDC. So the keynote, right? Keynote happens Monday morning. The developer state of the union, which is like keynote part two, happens Monday. Essentially, there's a lunch break and then there's State of the Union. That happens then, and that's really, and right during that time, usually during the State of the Union, is when the new OS and the new version of Xcode are pushed out and or released. And so I've been at cocktail parties with people that clearly have access to all this stuff, have an interest in it, and have decided, no, like you said, I'm here, I want to see humans, this is important. But, you know, where they, a lot of people have said to me, you know, this is the day where I find out whether I get to take a summer vacation or not. Because, right? Because, you know, the clock starts ticking, you know, early June, you find out what work you need to do so that your app is ready when the general public is supposed to get the operating system in September, generally, maybe October, you know, depending on how things go. So, and, you know, but even developers that know that their summer vacations are now curtailed, but still are not, like, they're not furiously working that night to fix these things or to patch for, I don't even want to say fix, to adapt their update their software to work with the new things that Apple has rolled out. You just have to, you have to understand. And, you know, I run my, so because I do exactly what I've said, my laptop therefore runs the new operating system all summer. And every time I pick it up to go use it in the months of June and July, and usually all of August, I am running into some sort of significant problem in terms of my workflow, because I rely on some third party app that is not ready for this. And that's assuming the OS itself is stable, which is, for the most part, it generally is. Like, by the time that happens, it really is the developer preview. There's some level of beta testing for Apple themselves that happens, but by and large, by probably by today, to be perfectly honest, you know, whatever the next OS is for both Mac and iOS is probably relatively stable, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now when you guys prepare for installing betas, of course you both do some sort of backup so that if something goes horribly wrong, you have a way to roll back. And I'm curious, what tools are you using on macOS and iOS for those backups?
So, I use iMazing on iOS. I use iMazing to manage all of my iOS nonsense, because basically backing everything up reliably and being able to restore it reliably at the moment is pretty excruciating. And so the way to make it suck way less is to not use iTunes. It's to use iMazing. So I have, like, you know, date stamped backups so that I know, like, this is the one from the before times. And I would also like to point out that I adhere to the Star Trek rule of betas, the Star Trek movie rule of betas, which is I only install the even numbers.
That's an absolutely awesome analogy.
Because when you call it that, it's much easier to remember. So that's what I do for iOS. And then, like I said, I leave my computer untouched as much as possible. And I have an external hard drive that I use to install everything to instead. The rest of the time, I have a different external hard drive I use and a NAS that I have on my network for Time Machine backups, so that if I do decide that something is running on beta, like, I can still roll back beta stuff. So if I install the new beta and it's terrible, I can always roll back to a previous version if I need to do that. So that's how I'm doing it.
Okay. And Dave, how about you?
Yeah, very similar. I, you know, like I said, I cloned my drive before I put the backup on it. And I keep that clone around just because there are times when I just need to boot from a known stable OS. And, you know, thankfully with things like iCloud and IMAP email and Dropbox and those sorts of things, my data, it doesn't really get stale on a clone, even after months, right? Because it just refreshes itself and there's everything that I need. And then I also use iMazing for backing up my iPhones. Although, because I use a spare phone for this, it's generally not, it's not as urgent an issue. In fact, I probably wouldn't even back up a phone, the spare phone, before I do anything with it. So there you go.
All right. So what tool do you use on your Mac for cloning?
I use Carbon Copy Cloner these days.
Okay.
I have gone back and forth between that and SuperDuper. Currently, they are both stellar tools. I was a SuperDuper user for a very, very long time. And then a number of years ago, they had an issue where even after release, their auto scheduler was not working with whatever build of Mac OS it was. And I thought, well, I clone my Mac every day using the scheduler in whichever software. And so I was like, wait a minute, I'm not getting my backups. I got to jump ship. So I jumped ship to Carbon Copy Cloner and have been there since then. But, you know, if there's no reason at this point in time, I would say either one of these is a fantastic tool to use.
And I would agree. And you guys hit the tools I use, iMazing and Carbon Copy Cloner. So I think we found the tools that people can feel comfortable working with for those backups. All right.
Cool.
Well, Dave, you mentioned WWDC. Kelly, you did a little bit as well. I think even I did. And so with that in mind, I want to talk about App Camp for Girls for a minute because, Kelly, you're part of the team, and you have been from the beginning. And there's the whole fundraiser that happens for App Camp at WWDC. So tell me about that.
Well, I hope you have more than 1 minute because I will talk about App Camp for as many minutes as anybody will let me. Okay. So App Camp for Girls is a really great organization. And one of the biggest things that we do every year is we have this party at WWDC. And one of the things that we do at WWDC at this party is we have James Dempsey come and play. And he plays some really great and pretty nerdy songs. You may know him from his hit, I Almost Dropped My iPhone 5. One of the great things to me personally, because I'm not biased about this at all, is that when James goes to conferences and things, he will recruit other people to play with him on stage if he has a concert. And they're called James Dempsey and the Breakpoints. And if you can only be in the band occasionally, then you are called a conditional breakpoint. And this year, I will be back at the WWDC fundraising party for App Camp for Girls, and I get to be a conditional breakpoint. So you can come listen to me play the ukulele and sing along with the Leaky Song, which is about memory management on iPhones, and it's fantastically nerdy and it's catchy as all heck. And I will be on stage for that, and you can meet me running around the party like a crazy person, saying hello to people and making sure everybody has enough to drink and enough to eat and all those kinds of things. It's one of the biggest, it's probably the biggest fundraiser we do every year that we do on an annual basis. And we're really excited to be able to use the party in San Jose and talk to a bunch of new people and do stuff that's interesting. And tickets are available now if you want to go. I think it's $20. And there will be merchandise available as well. You may be able to get your hands on some limited edition App Camp treats. You may not. I'm not. You'll have to come to the party to find out. And it's a strong possibility. I will go as far as say it's a strong possibility. And it's going to be a really good time. The party is always really fun. If you guys have any questions about it, you should ask me now.
Well, the question that I have, and I'm playing the straight man here for this one. Hey, Kelly, what's App Camp for Girls?
App Camp for Girls is an organization that was started by Jean McDonald, longtime friend of the Mac community, to introduce computer science to girls going into grades 8 and 9. And what we do is over the course of the week, it's a week long day camp, and we build a complete functioning iOS app. And on the last day of camp, the teams present their apps to a panel of investors. And they talk a little bit about what their marketing would be like, how their app would make money. They have to design an icon, all the graphics for the apps. If you want to find out what they look like, we do bundle all of them at the end of the summer and put them in the app store. And so you can go buy one of those compendiums for $1 or all of them for, I think, $3. All of that money goes to App Camp as well. And you can see what they actually develop. And it's super great. Everyone who comes through the program then is a published App Store developer, which is also pretty great if you're a ninth grade girl trying to figure out what you're doing. We're inclusive, and we are in. So we take girls, female identifying and gender nonconforming. This year we are in Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Chicago. We have at least one spot open in every one of those cities. So you should definitely go to appcamp 4girls.org and you can sign up for camp. That's a number 4 in the middle of the URL. And if you have any questions, let us know through the show.
All right. Well, I'm planning on being at the party because I'll be at WWDC. So I'll see you there, Kelly. And Dave, we are pretty much out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to chime in if you had any questions about App Camp for Kelly. So it's all you.
No, I'm very good. I was able to enjoy the party last year and contributed and all that stuff, and I am very much looking forward to it all again.
All right. Well, then I'll see both of you there. And like I said, we are out of time. So, Dave, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you here. And Kelly, it's always great to have you here, too. Thanks for being here.
You're more than welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.